Welcome to the weekend edition of the Undisputed Podcast. I'm your host, Jenny Taft. Today's podcast features all the best segments from this week's slate of Undisputed. With in-depth interviews and discussions, we have a lot to talk about heading into next week. Skip, Shannon, let's get to it.
Yesterday, Sunday afternoon, Tom Brady was watching a replay of Super Bowl 51 and posted a picture of himself watching that game as he watched on Fox, on Big Fox National, a replay of Super Bowl 51 as he watched his own team, the Patriots, rally historically from 28-3 down late in the third quarter. And as they pulled it off, Brady continued to post on Instagram sort of emotion emojis and reaction, and he had a blast watching that Super Bowl on Fox. So did I. Shannon Sharp, in hindsight, as we look back at that epic comeback and epic collapse, does Brady and do the Patriots deserve credit for it, or does Kyle Shanahan deserve the blame for it?
Well, Skip, they deserve credit for winning the game, but the Falcons lost this game. Skip, you cannot run the ball the same amount of times in the second half, up 28-3, as the team that's down 28-3 does. They ran the ball 9 times in the second half after being up, and they ran the ball 5 times on the first 2 drives, 4 times over the next 3 drives, Skip. And then on the final possession, I mean, think about this. After being up 28-3, Skip, they go 3 and out. Matt Ryan fumbles on 3rd and 1. 1st and 10 at the 22 with 4:40 left. Get a field goal. The ball game's over. They go run, sack, penalty, and we all know what happened after that. Now, this is what Skip Bayless told us a little over a month ago. Skip said the 49ers and Jimmy Garoppolo lost the game. It wasn't that Patrick Mahomes boy and the Chiefs came back from 2010. They lost the game. Now, that's the same offensive coordinator calling plays for the 49ers that lost, that was calling for the Atlanta Falcons that lost. So by Skip logic, the Falcons lost the game. It wasn't what Tom Brady and the Patriots did. It was what the Falcons didn't do. Right, Skip?
I have no idea what you just said. You completely lost me because we're talking about Jimmy Garoppolo. We're talking about a quarterback that was barely allowed to throw the football in the first 2 playoff games, that got them to that Super Bowl. And then when they were desperate in the fourth quarter and had to throw the football, Garoppolo went 3 of 11 with an interception and obviously missed Emmanuel Sanders, who had broken wide open on a deep route at the goal line and missed him by, 7-8 yards on that throw? Sorry, Jimmy G finally spit the bit for the 49ers right on schedule, just as Kyle Shanahan probably would have secretly bet that he would have done, because they didn't want to get in that position. But if we look back at what Tom Brady, the GOAT, did in this Super Bowl 51, nobody wants to give Brady credit for this. Shannon Sharp is the leader of the Brady haters, and they all try to sweep under their little carpet. Shannon's got some carpet up there up on the hill in Bel Air in his palatial estate. But he's sweeping under his carpet what Tom Brady did once again in a fourth quarter and overtime. He threw for 246 yards. Most quarterbacks would take 246 for an entire Super Bowl. But in the fourth quarter and overtime, epic comeback, Brady throws for 246, but Shannon never brings that up because it hurts too much. It pains him too much to bring up 246 yards. So now let's look at what Atlanta did or didn't do down the stretch of that game. They were up 28-20 with 5:53 left, and they had the ball 1st and 10 at their 10-yard line. And what happened? Well, Kyle Shanahan didn't remember. What had happened the night before, Shannon Sharp? You were there. In fact, you predicted this on Undisputed. Matt Ryan, the night before, was named NFL MVP. So they didn't have Jimmy G at quarterback. They had MVP at quarterback, right? You were there.
Right.
MVP Matt Ryan. Okay, so what do you do now if you're up 28-20? You dance with who brung you. You got there throwing the football all year. Let the MVP throw it, because that's what you do best. So on first down, he throws it to Devontae Freeman for 39 yards. Wow, that'll work. Then 2 plays later, he throws it to Julio for 27 yards. Pass, pass. Is that good? Yeah, that's great. So now it's first and 10 down at the 22-yard line with 4:40 left. And he goes back to what he didn't do best, which is Devontae running the football. And it goes from minus 1 yard. And Kyle Shanahan's thinking, what am I thinking? I can't run it here. I got to put the ball back in my MVP's hands. So what happens on second down? Matt Ryan drops back and he holds the ball and he holds it too long. And Trey Flowers sacks him from minus 12. That's no good. That's not an MVP play. You got to throw the ball away and not take the sack when you're in field goal range.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Because he was doing what he did best, but he turned it into the worst. Next play. It's third and 23 from the 35, still barely in field goal range. And Jake Matthews, who's a very good offensive lineman, gets called for a hold. Wow. Really? Jake Matthews holding. Oops. Now, you are letting the MVP do what he does best because you're looking at number 12 over on that other sideline. You don't want to give him the ball back. You want to play to win. You want to go for the throat, and you get a holding call. Sack, hold. And all of a sudden, it's third and 33 from the 45, and now you got to throw it again, and he misses Taylor Gabriel. I have no problem with any of those play calls. I would have called the same plays myself. I have a problem with the MVP's execution of those plays. And again, I've told you before, I'm not the biggest Matt Ryan fan. I think that year was a little bit of a blip. And I think that year was partly, I'm going to give part of the credit to Kyle Shanahan for making Matt Ryan better that year than he deserved to look, for helping him win the MVP. So I'm going to give all the credit to Brady and none of the blame to Kyle Shanahan for doing exactly what he had been doing the whole year long.
Skip, but if you think about this, if you look at it like this, put this in perspective, is that now you got the ball at the 22-yard line. Matt Ryan has done his job. Kyle, you've done your job. Even if you run the ball three times into the line, make them burn their time out, kick the field goal, the ball game's over. Why do you feel, because that got you there throwing the ball, that you need to continue to throw the ball? You have to understand how this game is going to play out. Now, we're just trying to get out of here with the win. It doesn't seem, sometimes people get caught up. They want to blow the Patriots out. They want to beat them by 14. They want to beat them by 21. No. Now you play into their hands. You take unnecessary risk that you don't deserve, that you don't need to take. You're up 8. Run the ball 3 times. Make them call timeout. Bring your field goal kicker on to kick a 40-yard field goal, go up with 2 minutes left in the ball game by 11. And if Tom Brady can get 11 points in 2 minutes, now you got something. But you don't do what they did. And you know that. But see, also, what you didn't mention, Skip, after they went up 28-3, what happened? How many more points did the Falcons score? So did Tom Brady sack the quarterback? Did Tom Brady force a fumble? Did Tom Brady D up? You didn't mention anything about Belichick's defense then. Oh, my bad. Only when they give up 40 points do you mention that.
Okay.
Gotcha.
Okay, I'll give them some credit. I'll give them 25% of the credit. But 246 yards in the fourth quarter in overtime, because remember, after Atlanta went backwards, Tom Brady got the ball back, but it was clear down on his 9-yard line. And here he comes, and it took right away. It's third and 10 from the 9, and he hits Chris Hogan for 16. In that drive, Tom Brady, this is the tying drive, he goes completions of 16, 11, 23, 20, 13, and 7, and then hits Danny Amendola for the clutch 2-point conversion to tie the game and send it to overtime. It was just extraordinary, and I'm glad that Tom Brady got to sit back, kick back wherever he was, and watch on Fox a replay of his own greatness, and to post about it throughout the game, because that was fun.
Can you ask me this before we go? We talked about this earlier, about when LeBron struggled and wins. All you mentioned is LeBron struggled, never the win. Why don't you mention the struggle that Tom Brady had that put them in that 28-3 deficit? Because, see, all you want to talk about the 246 and the win. You don't mention the struggles, but LeBron gets the struggles mentioned, not the win. I'm just trying to figure out why. That's all. Nothing. That's it.
Well, I told you down the stretch of Game 6 in 2013 finals, LeBron was atrocious. He would have been the GOAT lowercase, like he would have gotten the blame for that game. if not for Ray Allen. So it's simple as that. No mercy. Let's heat it up even more here on Undisputed. Larry Bird is now in the finals of the fan poll on ESPN to choose the greatest college basketball player ever. And remember, Magic Johnson made it to the final four of that fan poll. So this got us thinking about the most watched basketball game ever. And that was obviously the 1979 NCAA championship game in Salt Lake City. I was there. I covered that game that night. Magic versus Bird. That was the game that everybody said put college basketball and certainly the Final Four on the national map. So, Shannon Sharp, I ask you, why was that game the highest rated game ever in the history of basketball?
Skip, I believe there were two elements at play here. You remember, Skip, back then, there was not Amazon, there was not Hulu, there was not a whole lot to watch. You had ABC, you had CBS, and you had NBC. That was it. So all these other channels, there was no social media. There was not a whole lot for you to do. But also, Skip, remember, in the 70s, there was still this element of a racial. You had, the, as you mentioned, the Great White Hope against Magic Johnson. Now, Skip, a whole lot of people didn't know about Larry Bird because back then, it's not like it is now. You live in Georgia, you can see UCLA, you can see all these other games. But back then, games were regional. You only got a chance to see Larry Bird once they got to what we know now as March Madness. So there's not a whole lot of people that knew about Larry Bird or Magic Johnson. But when we finally get here, Skip, I remember asking myself, I'm like, how did he get the name Magic? I know his mom ain't named him. You know, I'm asking my lady, why his name, you know, why his name Magic? I didn't know because he could do things with the basketball people hadn't seen before. It seemed like he was a magician. That's how he got the name. So I'm like, okay. And I'm looking at Bird and Magic. And as you mentioned, Skip, it's always been that. From when Jack Johnson was the heavyweight title champ and he's fighting these, as we call them, Great White Hope, you had these sides pitted. Whether it be Joe Louis fighting, I think it was Max Smelling back then. So you've always had one side or the other, and you had right on the edge of your seat. Skip, I don't think watching that game, and I remember watching it from start to finish, that I ever think this game would do this or it would mean this. I didn't, Skip. I did not. The first national championship game I can remember watching was 77, was Marquette and UNC. But I'm like, okay, you know, Final Four, okay, Bird and Magic. Now, I don't remember, Skip, it being billed like this because it was Bird and Magic. I remember when Kentucky beat Duke the year before. Kyle Macy, Jack Gibbons, I think Rick Roby was on that roster, Skip. They didn't talk about it like this. The guys that were in that game, they didn't talk like they talked about Bird and Magic. And if I'm not mistaken, Skip, wasn't that game on NBC? I could be wrong, but I think it was NBC. It might have been CBS. But, Skip, I don't remember the previous games or even the games right after that being talked about like this game. And it wasn't until maybe 10, 15 years later that I realized that I had actually watched something special. But when you got, Skip, we've never seen anything like this. We've never seen a white ball player that's been like Larry Bird. We never. And I don't know if we'll ever see it again. Forget, you know, foreign-born or American-born. We've never seen anything close to American-born. You know, we compare them to say Luka has some Bird in him. He might be the closest thing. But we haven't seen an American-born white player even come close to Larry. And so, Skip, I think that there's the racial element, and I think the mere fact, Skip, there was not a whole lot going on. So what else were you going to watch? And you remember, Skip, when you got shows back then that were good, I remember MASH, and I remember Dallas and Dynasty. And Skip, those shows ran for 10, 15 years, and they would pull 10, 15, 20 million fans a week because that was it. What else you were going to do?
Yeah, good point. Okay, I start with the final irony to this whole discussion, which was, again, I was there that night, and Shannon, the game was a dud. The game was basically a mismatch and was never close. So the final score was 75-64, but the halftime score was 37-28, a 9-point game. And it never felt like it was any closer than a 9 or a 10-point game. And Bird ran out of gas. He was playing, you know, the full, he's playing every game, every night. And he did okay at 19 and 13, but shot only 7 of 21 from the floor. Magic was very good. He was 24-7 and 5 assists. But Gregory Kelser, who was going to be a pretty good NBA player himself, he kind of stole the show with 19-8-9. Nobody remembers that. But the only thing anybody remembers is the buildup and the crescendo that was this game. And I'll be the first to tell you, I have a hard time of saying this put college basketball on my map because it did not. Shannon, I was a huge college basketball fan already. Mm-hmm. I was a Pistol Pete Maravich fan. I had the honor and the privilege of seeing Pistol Pete play twice, once at Vanderbilt and once in Oklahoma City at what was called the all-college tournament was played at Christmas time. So to me, college basketball was a huge thing already. And then I was having a hard time becoming a Larry Bird fan because I don't know if you remember this, Shannon, but in the game that started to put him on the map, which was the regional final against Eddie Sutton's Arkansas team featuring Sidney Moncrief and Scott Hastings, at the end of the game, a bunch of Indiana State fans rushed the floor. They were the Sycamores. And Larry Bird turned and actually punched one of his own fans, decked the kid as he ran toward him. You know, yeah, he fired on him. And I'm like, who is this guy? And then that guy on the Sunday in between the games, which were obviously played semifinals on Saturday, then the finals on Monday night in Salt Lake City, Larry Bird won National Player of the Year and stiffed everybody who went to the big breakfast for the John Wooden Award. So he didn't show up for that. And I'm thinking, who does this guy think he is? Well, he's Larry Bird. And in those days, Shannon, Gil Brandt, who was the draft master and sort of architect of the Dallas Cowboys, always had a hospitality suite at the Final Four, which is obviously football to basketball. But Gil Brandt always prided himself on, I'm going to find that one kid who could play tight end, some college basketball player who could play tight end for me for the Dallas Cowboys. So all the great college basketball coaches would come by Gil's hospitality suite because it's free drink and free food. And Gil told me that he talked to all the highest level coaches and none of them were big fans of Larry Bird. He told me that on Sunday. Gil said a lot of them think he's too slow-footed to play in the NBA. And I'm like, okay, all right. And so I'm thinking maybe he is too slow-footed to play in the NBA. Well, the nation didn't think that because the nation was already saying, wait a second, here's a great, and I'm talking about white America, obviously, here's a great white hope who isn't a hopeless underdog. They could already see that he's 6'9", he's legit. He can maybe hang with Magic Johnson. So here you had what you pointed out, the greatest nickname in the history of sports is Magic. There's nothing like that nickname. It gives me chills even to speak it out here in my little house here on the west side of LA because he was going to be Showtime, but he was already Magic in college at Michigan State. And now he's up against a great white hope who wasn't great white hype. There's no hype to Larry Bird. He's going to be really legit. Good, we thought, even in this game. Yeah. So to me, remember, I had kind of, as a white guy, I'd pretty much conceded at that point that the NBA, which I also loved, was mostly a black man's game. It just was because
it was.
The black players were just better than the white players. So I couldn't even fathom how a white guy was going to be an MVP in the NBA. I didn't see that coming, but it looked like maybe America kind of hoped that was coming. So at least white America, and this is not racist, this is just a racial view, that white America said, hey, maybe we have a guy now. Well, they did have a guy who became on to become the guy in Boston and often in the NBA. Go on.
Right. He was, Skip. And the thing was, Skip, is that you remember back then, Red Auerbach saw something. Because back then, you could draft a player. Said player could go back to college, and you were still on his right. So imagine if you could draft, say, LeBron had gone to, you know, he drafted him as a junior. Yeah. Bird went back to college, and he still possessed his rights. But Skip, in order for Magic and Bird to do what they did, Magic had to come out. Magic could not have gone back to school, have Bird leave, and then come. It had to, they had to be joined at the hip, because that's the only, Skip, I don't remember, now maybe you can remember, is that they build this Bird Magic. It wasn't about the teams. It wasn't Michigan State, Indiana State. It was Bird versus Magic. I don't know if we've seen that since. And so they were joined at the hip, because when Magic won his first title, it was tape delayed. They were not, you didn't see the finals live. You saw it on tape delay. They changed that. But think about this, Skip. It had to be one, they had to go to the Celtics and the Lakers, because the Celtics and Lakers had battled all through the 60s and a few times in the 70s. So now, in order for us to pick this rivalry back up, Bird, they had to go opposite. And now, they guess what we got? They just, it had to be that, Skip. There's no other way. For them to be tied like they were, to play this game, Bird, because Magic was only a sophomore. He could have come back to school, but he left. He goes number one overall. The Celtics had already drafted Larry Bird the year before, owned his rights. Oh, my goodness. And Skip, it, what it did, though, it changed March Madness. The way we look at it now, Skip, it wasn't like that before now.
Yeah. Well, we'd never seen an underdog. You know, we've seen, obviously, Valpo and Butler and Florida Gulf Coast, but they never had Larry Bird. You know, they didn't have that guy the 33-0 Sycamores made it to the championship game, but they had that guy. And everybody could at least see that guy was a real guy. He was not just a hopeless underdog. He had a shot. And then I just happened, because I'm watching a lot of classic TV, I don't know if you've seen even recently the Magic Bird documentary. I forget where I saw it. It may have been on ESPN, but I can't remember the other day. And it was Cedric Cornbread Maxwell talking about Bird's the first practice when he was a rookie. And Cedric, and I'm paraphrasing, but he was saying, you know, I just didn't think a white guy could play basketball. And it only took one practice for Cedric to say, wait a second, this white boy can flat play basketball. And the amazing part of this story to me, back to you, Shannon Sharpe, is when you were a kid, Larry Bird became your favorite player. That's shocking to me, right? I don't know, right? I don't know how old you were when he became your favorite, but he was.
In high school. Skip, I was in high school, and even when I went to college, I had Bird shoes, I had Bird t-shirts, I had Bird posters on my wall. And guys were looking at me like, man, dude, you from rural South Georgia, and you like, Skip, no one in high school, they couldn't believe, like, man, why you like Bird? Why you want Bird to be the... Skip, I knew he was, I mean, watching him, I'm like, okay, he's good. But Skip, when you start watching, Skip, if you remember, he beat Magic for Rookie of the Year. The vote total was, if I'm not mistaken, like 63-3. That's how dominating he was. Bird finished fourth in the MVP voting as a rookie. Let that sink in, Skip. The likelihood of we having a rookie in today's game finished that high. Now, Wes Unseld actually won the award, if I'm not mistaken, as a rookie. But Bird finished fourth behind Kareem. That was, let this sink in, Skip. In 1980, that was the last year that the players voted for the MVP. The players voted Larry Bird fourth in the MVP voting. Skip, it was just something about him. I'm just watching him. And Skip, like you said, he was slow of foot. Larry Bird probably couldn't outrun the officials that was calling his game. Mm-mm. But boy, he could get to them spot and bust them up.
Okay, so I want to point out to our faithful viewers who know my man Shannon Sharpe. Shannon Sharpe is a proud black man who's been so hugely, greatly outspoken on this show on black social justice causes. And yet, this guy, the great white hope, comes along, who's not white hype, and Shannon Sharpe in high school says, that guy can play. I don't care what color he is. Yeah. He can just flat out play. So that's why this means even more to me, knowing you the way I've gotten to know you.
But Skip, I make no bones about it. I wanted Magic Johnson to whip his ass in that final, though. Don't win that game.
He became my
favorite player after that game. But no, you're not beating Magic. Don't beat Magic on this one, because I couldn't go back. Skip, I couldn't go back to school because they're going to be bragging.
I got it. So here came Larry Bird, like magic, 6 feet, 9 inches tall. No jumper, no leaper, but he could shoot that jumper from behind his head, and he was deadly yes. from anywhere with that jump shot. And he didn't have speed, but he did have quickness of foot, and he yes. could get a step on you because he was slick with that first step and any spin move. He was ambidextrous. He wasn't a good passer. He was a great passer. He didn't feature the pass he quite was. The way Magic did. But then he had such a big body that he was a below-the-rim rebounder who could get you 10 boards a game. And the full package of it, he was a bad boy, man. He was just because he was a deadly clutch shooter. So you had the whole package in Larry Bird, and you had the storybook story of Larry goes to Boston, Magic goes to Showtime, and they're going yes. head-to-head through the 80s. And it couldn't get any better than that, because not only did they put college basketball on the map, but they put the NBA on the map, that rivalry that became ultimately a friendship, right?
Yes.
Whew,
yes,
Skip, story. Larry Bird. Night. Yep.
You mentioned, Skip, that he was above the rim, but Larry Bird was a career 24, 10, and 6. Let that sink in for just a second. He averaged 24 points, 10 rebounds, 6 assists. Skip, his greatest game goes unnoticed. Larry Bird was one steal away from a quadruple-double with 30 in 33 minutes, but they were blowing him out, and he didn't get it. Now, in hindsight, he probably looks back and says, because that's the hardest thing to accomplish in the NBA. I'm talking about the quadruple-double, Skip, in a good way. We've seen guys get quadruple-doubles in the bad way where they have 10 turnovers. But he had yep. 9 steals in 33 minutes. And he probably like, you know what? Because back then, Skip, guys didn't look at numbers like they do now. No. If a guy is one rebound or one steal, one assist away from a triple-double, he's probably going to go in the game and get that. If he's one rebound, assist, or steal away from a quadruple-double, he might finish out the game trying to get that because it's such a rarity.
You got it. Right. Maybe he was too slow-footed to D you up on the perimeter and lock you down. But he could roam on defense, and he could disrupt.
Yes.
He could get his hands on lots of balls and steal a lot of passes. And in the end, whew, Larry Bird was something. And we'll see now head-to-head with Michael Jordan and this ESPN fan vote poll. I don't think he has a chance in that, but we'll see. No mercy. The Athletic has chosen the best player ever to wear each number in the National Football League from 00 all the way up to 99. And of note, my man Shannon Sharp at least was given honorable mention on number 84, which obviously was won by Randy Moss. But still, that's pretty great for my man Shannon Sharp. He was honorable mention to Randy Moss. Pretty great. Way to go, Shannon Sharp. But beyond that, the number that caught my eye was number 81, because the player chosen by The Athletic as the best ever to wear number 81 was Terrell Owens, T-O, as I always called him, Team Obliterator. Shannon Sharp, mm-hmm. do you agree that Terrell mm-hmm. Owens was the best ever to wear 81?
Yeah. T.O., for me, T.O. is the second greatest receiver to ever play in the NFL. Skip, if you look at him through the first 9 years, now, remembering, Calvin Johnson, Megatron, only played 9 seasons. And through their 9 seasons, Skip, they're very familiar. T.O. went to 5 Pro Bowls. Megatron went to 6. T.O. had 4 first-team All-Pros, 3. And everything is really, really similar. They averaged, T.O. averaged 10 touchdowns. Megatron averaged 9. But then, Skip, guess what? T.O. played another 6 years, over 400 catches, over 6,000 yards, 58 touchdowns, first team All-Pro. Skip, I mean, when you factor in the longevity and you factor in the productivity, see, Skip, it's just, for me, it's just not good enough that you play a long time. Because, Skip, if I collect cans for a number of years, I will have a bunch of cans. T.O. was productive. T.O. went to Buffalo. He was better than Peerless Price. He went to Cincinnati. Ocho Cinco was still there. He was their best receiver. He went to Dallas. He was their best receiver. He's the only, he, Ted Hendricks, and Deion Sanders are the only three men that have been first team all pro for three different teams. I don't really know. Look, and Megatron had an unbelievable career, but T.O. was the best 81, period.
This just makes me sick at my stomach. I'm sorry, and let me say before I unleash on this one, we've had Terrell on the show many times. I've had him on TV with me many, many times. I like him. I honestly, from my heart, from my soul, I like the guy. I enjoy having him on the show. We had him on at the Super Bowl, and he wasn't good. He was great. And I always look forward to having him on the show because we spar a little bit. He doesn't like me, and I get it. But I think he kind of respects me, and I really respect him because he was a great football player, and he played with rage and with high passion. I get that. I also was there in San Francisco when he wrecked that 49ers team, and I'm sorry, he just did. And then I was close to so many players when I was working at ESPN, ex-Eagles, who've just said he wrecked us. Teams that should have won two or three Super Bowls. And then I was very close to several Dallas Cowboys who said he turned us upside down under Bill Parcells in Dallas. I don't know. And even that, I'll just forget about all the, it's not even off the field. It's in the locker room and in the huddle and on the sidelines. But I'll forget about all that, Shannon. Look, Calvin Johnson was a freak of a beast of a rare player. We'd never seen anything like it. He was 6'5", 240 pounds, and he ran 4.35 at the combine. What? It's unheard of. It's impossible.
Yeah.
He could jump. Mm-hmm. He could catch. He was a package unlike anything Terrell ever dreamed of. What was Terrell, a third-round pick? Calvin was the second overall pick, and you could have made a case he should have been the first overall pick. And he goes to a bad team in Detroit, a team that pretty quickly was going to go 0-16, and he got stuck there. And his spirit died in Detroit, and you're right. He went Barry Sanders, and he quit early. He quit when he was 30 years of age over contract issues. It was almost like what Jim Brown did with the Cleveland Browns and Barry Sanders.
Art Modell.
There you go. And Barry just got sick of losing in a team that wouldn't do enough to surround him with the kind of players they needed to go places in the playoffs. And it was the same with Megatron, but he had a nickname, Megatron, for a reason, because nobody had ever seen anything like him. We used to have Nate Burleson now on NFL Network and obviously on CBS, but Nate Burleson used to come to Bristol, Connecticut, where I was with First Take and ESPN. And occasionally we'd go to dinner. I think Shannon's been with me to Cava before. There, it's like the only place to go in Bristol, Connecticut. And every dinner I had with Nate Burleson, all I heard about were Megatron legendary stories, practice stories, that he was just unguardable. And you look at the numbers of what he did, Shannon, he still holds the single season receiving record for yards, almost 2,000 yards. He still holds the single season record for 100-yard games with 11. And over his 9 seasons, he led the NFL in receiving yards and touchdowns. And Terrell's putting up big numbers, too. I get that. But he wasn't doing it the way this guy was doing it. And I'll never forget October 27th of 2013. You might not remember this game, but I do because it was against my Cowboys at Detroit. Oh, Lord have mercy. He caught 14 balls for 329 yards. That seems almost like inconceivable that 14 would equal 329. And remember, it should have been the record, but I don't know how Flipper Anderson did this, but back in 1988, 89, I think it was, with the Rams, Flipper caught.
It was 89 on Sunday night.
336 yards. Yeah, 336. So 329 for Calvin against my Cowboys. And then he got to play in two playoff games. And do you remember the one where they got blown out in New Orleans? That's when Drew Brees and company were just riding high. And in that game, Calvin caught 12 for 211 in a playoff game. And then against my Cowboys in the game that my Cowboys, I'll be the first to admit, stole it. It was a robbery. Calvin, they were triple teaming him in that game, and he still caught 5 for 85, which is 17 a catch. I mean, he was something so spectacular that he had a nickname, Megatron. And I'm sorry, when I think of 81, I think of Terrell for right and wrong reasons, but I think of Calvin as the essence of 81. Like the beast that we'd never seen before at receiver. I think he was the most gifted receiver ever. You can have Jerry Rice or Michael Irvin or, you know, Terrell, whoever else you want to throw in there. It's just 81 should belong to Calvin Johnson. He was just better than Terrell, but you're right. He didn't go from San Francisco to Philly to Dallas to Buffalo to Cincinnati to Seattle. He didn't keep doing that. He quit when he was 30, and I don't think he should be penalized for that.
That's his nickname. T.O., the most fun, the most entertaining receiver to ever play the game. Skip, look, and I think the thing what hurt T.O. is that because some of the things that you mentioned, look, there's always going to be a segment of a locker room that likes you. There's going to be a segment that don't like you. But around the league, Skip, I think T.O. got punished sometimes because of the way he was, and he didn't get voted to Pro Bowls, and he didn't become an All-Pro because of some of the reasons that you mentioned. But Skip, you can't argue those numbers. Not only did he play an extended period of time, he was productive throughout the entirety of his career, and that's all you can ask for. He was on pace to have another 1,000-yard season, have another double-digit touchdown season before he tore his knee up, I think, the last two or the last three games in Cincinnati, when he was clearly their best receiver, and they had Ocho Cinco still there. So for me, Skip, because of what he was able to do and the length of time in which he's able to do it, there's no, I mean, yeah, Mega Skip, no, we'll probably never see another guy that big, that fast, that strong, with that kind of ability, play that position. Normally guys that play that have that kind of freaky athleticism, Skip, the defensive lineman. Skip, that's what we see. We see defensive linemen. We see tight ends that play that position, not wide receivers. Normally, we see Noah Fant. Skip, he ran that fast, jumped like that. But he's a tight end. Megatron played outside the numbers. So, yes, it's freaky to see someone with that kind of size, that kind of speed, that kind of ability. But for me, T.O., and he did. Think about this, Skip. In his first 3 years, he played second fiddle to Jerry Rice. So what you call him got a head start on him. Just imagine. And they got rid of Jerry so T.O. could shine. Let that sink in for just a second. They got rid of T.O. They got rid of Jerry so T.O. could shine because they knew what he was in San Francisco.
Well, let this sink in for a second. I was there the day that Terrell Owens set the NFL record for catches in a single game at Candlestick Park. And it was Jerry Rice Day that day at Candlestick. And the Chicago Bears were visiting. And I was up in the press box. And the Bears said, we're going to triple cover Jerry Rice and barely cover Terrell Owens. And Jeff Garcia was smart enough to say, I'll keep throwing it over to number 81. But that game alone is not any reason for Terrell Owens to be voted the all-time wearer of number 81. I'm sorry. I'm happy for Terrell that he got in the Hall of Fame on his third try, even though I would not have voted for him. But for him, for his sake, I'm happy. And again, from my heart, I look forward to the next time Terrell visits us on Undisputed when we're back in studio. But I'm sorry, I just can't bear the thought of Terrell being the bearer of number 81 all time. But enough of that, because we've got to get back to... Yeah, go ahead.
Megatron got honorable mention, right?
But he was clearly a very close second. And you know what? You made the point. Maybe Terrell ekes out the win because he was so entertaining, because of all of his dances and all of his shenanigans and shtick that he did. And it was all great. I loved the Sharpie out of the sock. I was there that night covering that game in Seattle when he ran to the box at the end of the end zone and from his agent got the Sharpie to sign the football, put it in his sock. We know all that, the pom-poms. And it was one thing after another. I covered that team. But despite all that... not Megatron. No mercy. The Athletic has chosen the best players ever to wear every NBA number from 00 all the way up to 99. And guess who was chosen to represent number 23? Not LeBron James. And for that matter, LeBron wasn't even chosen to be the best player ever to wear number 6. That, of course, went to Bill Russell, the great Bill Russell. So, Shannon Sharp, or should I call you Lush Shannon Sharp? How big a problem do you have of Michael Jordan being chosen over LeBron James to represent the number 23?
I don't care about no number. We know what time it is. One guy's about to have 13 first-team All-NBA. The other guy had 10. Nobody has had, we have not seen a player enjoy this level of greatness for this extended period of time in NBA history. And I could, I was watching a game because last night it was on another network, games 5 and 6, games 5 and 7. I was like, he did that? Skip, did you know he's the only player in finals history to lead everyone in every statistical category, points, rebounds, assists, steals, and blocks? Skip, that's never been done. Game 7, a triple-dub. Most triple-dubs in final history. Skip, stop this. Y'all, okay, fine. We get numbers. What it seems to me, whoever had the number first got the cred. So, okay, yeah, he had the number first, so what? It's no big deal. We ain't crying about all that. But you know what time it is, Skip. You keep hanging, but he's 6-0 with 6 this and the walk-off. I get all that. But that ain't changing my view. LeBron James is the greatest basketball player to ever dribble a basketball and play in the 70-plus year history of the NBA. That's facts.
That is phony facts because, yeah, I know what time it is. It's about 11 o'clock Eastern time, and Michael Jordan is still and always will be the GOAT. And you are having a terrible week, and you will not give it up, even though you should, because you're sounding more and more delusional, because this week, Michael Jeffrey Jordan was even voted in an ESPN fan poll the greatest college player ever. And now on top of that, The Athletic says, well, undoubtedly, the player who should represent number 23 in NBA history is Michael Jordan. Obviously the original 23, but he's the GOAT. And you've got to give this up because in the end, Shannon, it's laughable for you to even try to make this case. It's laughable for LeBron. In fact, I saw a clip on ESPN this morning of LeBron talking about, what was it on, More Than an Athlete that he was doing with Maverick Carter. And he was saying, oh, the night that we came back from 3-1 down in one game 7, that's when it hit me. This makes me the greatest player ever. No, it doesn't. What are you talking about? Makes you the greatest player ever? I mean, the reason he's got all those numbers is he's played forever. What's he up to, like 22 years now? And he played in 8 straight finals because he was able to dominate the Eastern Conference. So he played in the finals. He poured numbers into the stat sheets of the finals. He stuffed the stat sheets of finals because he got to play in so many of them. But he's 3-6 in those finals. He did a reverse Tom Brady. Tom's 6-3 in Super Bowls. He's 3-6. And he's lucky because Ray Allen saved his legacy with the greatest clutch shot I've ever seen, or they would have lost that one to my Spurs. And what LeBron should be known more for are his epic failures, his meltdowns. In Boston, that last series, his first go-round in Cleveland, when the owner, Dan Snyder, even accused him of quitting against the Celtics as he just folded in games 4, 5, and 6. And then his first go-round with the Heat, first finals with the Heat, that was the all-time superstar meltdown I have ever seen. And then in 2013, game 6, he had an epic meltdown in the last 3 minutes of that game and missed, or LeBricked, I should say, the tying 3, and Ray Allen canceled it and saved him with the clutchest shot I've ever seen. And then 2014, he had an epic failure in games 3 and 4 in Miami as they blew that series to my Spurs. It was 1-1 going home to Miami. And then 2014, go look, it's just one after the other. That was when they got blown off the floor by a record margin by my Spurs. And then how about that game one at Oracle a couple of years ago when he just melted down after overtime and quit on his team? I don't know. Jordan didn't ever have one of those, and that's all I can remember from LeBron James.
Can I ask you a question? When Jordan couldn't get out the first round, what number was he wearing? He had to be wearing another number, right? Because, see, what you do is that you hold final losses against LeBron, but you never hold Michael Jordan not getting out of the first round. Now, you keep saying that he went up against historical great Big Three Celtics. Was the Warriors in 17 and 18, were they not historically great? So you mean to tell me Tim Duncan, Tony Parker, Manu Ginobili, and Kawhi, 4 Hall of Famers, he couldn't beat them, so he's terrible. He loses when they got Rondo, they got Kevin Garnett, they got Ray Allen, they got Paul Pierce. He couldn't beat them, so he's a failure. Michael Jordan couldn't beat the Big Three Celtics. He couldn't for the longest until they started dismantling. See, people are like, well, they went over the hill. When you keep going, making these deep playoff runs like the Pistons did year after year, eventually, yeah, you're going to track them down. That's what happened to Golden State. 5 straight finals, and the wheels came off. Literally and figuratively, because Klay Thompson blew out his knee, KD tore his Achilles, and we all know what happened. Toronto won the series. Skip, 8 straight finals. He did that. 8 straight. But you don't hold first-round bowouts, losing in the conference finals against Michael Jordan, like you hold finals losses against LeBron. Why?
Okay, let's just do this then. Let's go back to the shot heard round the world against Orlando in his first go-round in Cleveland, and they go up 2 games right. to 1, and everybody's telling me, boy, you're going to have to eat crow on this one. No, I don't think I'm going to have to eat crow. And what happened in games 4, 5,
they didn't go up 2-1, Skip. They didn't go up 2-1. They were already down 0-1 because Orlando had beaten them game 1. That was the game 2 shot. No. Orlando beat them twice in Orlando. He came back, won in Cleveland, and then they beat him again in Orlando. They lost 4-2. They weren't up no 2-1 against Orlando.
Okay, but after he hit the shot heard around the world, they still lost in 6 games. They didn't even get it to game 7.
Okay.
He's the GOAT. He's on his... Okay, don't give me that. That's a failure. That's an epic fail on LeBron's part because it was just a collection of shooters around Dwight Howard. You're better than those guys. You're still the best player on the court, and you lose in 6 games after you hit the shot heard around the world. And then against the Celtics if you're that guy, come on. You got to be. You can't just quit, as Dan Gilbert said. And then I had to hear the story from the inner circle. Oh, LeBron had to be sedated in games 4, 5, and 6 against Boston. Stop it. And then, of course, he takes his talent to South Beach, and he joins forces with Dwayne and Chris Bosh. He wasn't by himself. And in the finals, he won against the Baby Thunder. Did he not get huge help from Shane Battier hitting 3s and Mario Chalmers going crazy? And then Mike Miller hitting 7 3s in that closeout game 5 in Miami? I mean, come on. What are we talking about here?
You see?
He needed a lot of help. Michael Jordan had Scottie Pippen. Okay, so what?
So what? A top 50 player. So what? Dennis Rodman, a top 50
Michael
player.
Michael made him
so
a top
what?
50.
Really? I know he didn't. Skip, hold on. That man was a made man before he set foot. He had 2 championships and 2 defensive players of the year, and he led the league in it. He led the league in rebounding for 6 or 7 straight years. He was a made man before he even saw Michael Jordan. He used to put paint on Michael Jordan's head. But you see what you did? If LeBron is the guy, he's got to beat the Celtics. Well, if Jordan is the guy, he's got to beat the Big Three Celtics. Why not? Why do you hold, I'm just trying to figure out, why do people hold a LeBron to a higher standard than they hold Michael? If Michael is the GOAT, beat the Big Three Celtics. Beat the Bad Boy Pistons before they start dismantling them, before they got old. They were the Bad Boy Pistons in the 80s. What happened in the 80s, Skip?
Yeah, but wait a second. Once he broke through, Shannon, he went 6-0 in the finals with 6 MVPs. Not only did he win a college championship with a last-second shot, he won his final championship in Chicago in a game I covered in Salt Lake City by holding the pose on his last-second shot that beat the Utah Jazz, Karl Malone and John Stockton, who stole the ball from Malone in the corner. Well, what do you mean, stop saying it? It's just a fact. You can't stand facts.
First of all, in Carolina, that was not a last-second shot. There was 15 seconds still on the clock. Because you will not, when LeBron hits shots like that, you won't give him that. Oh, there was still time, yada, yada, yada. Now he hits a shot, and if Freddie Brown does not throw the ball to James Worthy, who knows? But I'm not going to get into that, Skip. He did that, that's over. All I'm asking you is that why couldn't he beat the Big Three Celtics and why couldn't he beat the Bad Boy Pistons in the 80s? But he got in the league. Scottie Pippen, if I'm not mistaken, got there in 87. So 87, 88, 89, 90. Why couldn't he do it?
Because who was your favorite player when you were a kid, when you were in high school?
That doesn't matter. Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, it doesn't matter. Oh, okay. It doesn't matter now.
No, it should have mattered then.
Hey, Larry Bird was a bad boy. He was a bad boy. And he had Robert Parrish and he had Kevin McHale and he had Dennis Johnson. He had Danny Ainge and I could go on. That was an all-time great basketball team. And they referred to Michael Jordan as Jesus in sneakers. It took all of their collective greatness to overcome him. It took all of the collective greatness of the Bad Boy Pistons, and that team went about 10 deep, and they were bad boys, as their nickname indicates, because they played basketball, and Sam Smith of the Chicago Tribune ended up writing a book called The Jordan Rules, a bestseller, about how they had to come up with a complete set of rules. This is how all 5 of us have to contain that guy. And that's how they kept overcoming him barely, barely, barely. And they went on to the finals and won 2 of those 3 finals because they were an all-time great team. But once Michael broke through, 6-0, 6 MVPs. You can't argue with that. It's game over.
Well, how about this here? I'm going to get me a ghostwriter and I'm going to write a book of how teams loaded up to beat GOAT James. Mainly the Warriors, mainly the Clippers, because we had never seen anything like this before. So, yeah, I'm going to get me a ghostwriter, and we're going to write a book, how the NBA loaded up, teams loaded up to take down GOAT James. That's going to be my book. Since all you want to do is refer back to the Jordan rules, all I'm asking you, don't wave your hand, all I'm asking you is that if Michael Jordan, Skip, you do realize he was going to the playoffs a sub-500, getting swept. He never got out of the first round until he got Scottie Pippen, and then you just poo-poo Scottie Pippen like he just a guy.
I got to get back to the book you want to write, and I'll help you write that book, and we're going to call it The LeBron Rules, and we're going to quote Coach Popovich about the LeBron rules when Spurs had all their epic matches against LeBron and company, because the Popovich rules to the Spurs were this. Get off him. Don't cover him. Make him shoot threes. Dare him to shoot threes. Dare him. He can't make them. He's not a good three-point shooter.
Yes,
just let him shoot that. We don't want him to drive the ball because he's the greatest driver of the basketball ever, but he's afraid to go to the free throw line, so he wants to keep shooting threes. And Pop was right. Lay off him. Game six down the stretch, yeah. He airballed a three, then he LeBricked a three off the back rim to tie with like 5 seconds and left, hit, and you know the rest of the story.
He hit several. Ray Allen. He hit several. Okay, and what about, hey, I forgot this other team, the Big Three Celtics, the newer version 2.0. Why you think they put that team together? Hey, Kevin Garnett didn't get drafted by the Celtics. Ray Allen didn't get drafted by the Celtics. James Posey didn't get drafted by the Celtics. They geared up to take down GOAT James. The same thing with the Warriors. The same thing the Clippers are doing. So the LeBron rules. I'm gonna anybody out there that's an author, you know, want to write a bestseller, come holler at your boy. We put this thing together.
Please. GOAT please, James holler rules. At Shannon, please. Yeah, holler at him. Because we need the chapter about how Draymond got suspended in game four of the, what was it, 2016 finals. Which flipped that finals on its ear because Golden State was up, obviously, 3-1. And all of a sudden, Draymond dared to yell at LeBron, you B-word. Yeah. And Kiki Vandeweghe, the director of, you know, suspensions for the league, is sitting courtside and says, you can't do that. We could hear that on national TV. He called him the B-word. And then he goes down and kicks LeBron Boss. In the midsection. It was the ultimate double jeopardy insult, and it got the glue of the Golden State Warriors suspended for game five, which they lost. They lost momentum. Kyrie started taking over games. LeBron was very good, but Kyrie made the shot of shots to win game seven. Steph Curry just shrank and disappeared.
Whoa, time out. You keep on talking about glue. What was it, Elvis glue? Because you know that thing couldn't stick. Okay, he was suspended for game five. Okay, what happened in game six? Was there Draymond not there? Now, you remind you, Skip, they got the unanimous momentum. MVP. No, ain't no lost no momentum. We don't do that. Hold on. Now, you just told me when LeBron hit the shot, they got the momentum, they should have rolled off and won the series. Now, you talking about they lost momentum because they lost Man, you need to stop.
No. What story do you love to tell the most? Draymond went crying into the parking lot the night of game seven and called Kevin Durant and said, please come save us. That's how tough-minded, how gutsy that Golden State team was. Stop it. Give me a break.
What? Well, so, hold on. So when did they ever do that? So when has somebody ever done that? When has somebody ever cried and said, okay, I need you to come join me so we can beat Jordan? They didn't do that. They didn't do that. The man boy Pistol said, we got this under control. We got this under control until they started expanding the league. And then Rick Mahorn left. Isaiah had gotten old. Skip, you do realize Isaiah came in after the 81. And all those finals appearances that he was going through, even though they didn't win, those deep playoff runs busted up the Bulls. And then finally, but Larry, Robert and Mikhail got old. DJ got old. All the Celtics got old. The Sixers had already gotten old because Dr. J, Moses Malone hadn't moved on, yada, yada, yada. And then all of a sudden, but he took time off. I wish LeBron had won those two finals, took a couple of years off, come back, won a couple of more, because then we judge him differently. Because, Michael would have done this. We don't know what Michael would have done. All we know is that he took time off and he didn't. And there was 3 years in which he did not go to the NBA Finals. LeBron James, eight straight. No
mercy. The Athletic has chosen the best player ever to wear each number in NBA history from 00 all the way up to 99. Number three caught my eye because Allen Iverson was chosen over Dwayne Wade. Shannon Sharp, do you agree with that choice?
Skip, I probably would have went with D. Wade for the simple fact the three championships and the finals MVP. And when he was clearly the best player on the first championship team, I think it was 06, in which they won. They beat, come from down 02, and they ended up beating the Dallas Mavericks. But Skip, their careers are very similar as far as credentials. D. Wade was a two-time first-team All-NBA. AI was three-time All-NBA, 8 for D. Wade, 7 for AI. 13-time All-Star for D. Wade, 11 for Allen Iverson. And as I mentioned, D. Wade won the Finals MVP. AI won the regular season MVP. So I probably, Skip, would have leaned more to D. Wade. because and D-Wade was a first-team all-defensive, three-time all-defensive team. AI didn't give you a whole lot on the defensive side, Skip. He could steal the ball, but he was so small. He was probably maybe, what, 5'6" tall, maybe a 155, 160, soaking wet. So he didn't really provide a whole lot on the defensive side. But, Skip, he was spectacular. And he was all these guys that's wearing these elbow sleeves, where do you think they got that from, Skip? They got that from AI. AI wore the elbow sleeve. AI came with the cornrows. They changed the rules because of AI. Because AI T-shirts were getting bigger. He was a 165 and had a T-shirt on that would have fit Shaq. And his pants would have fit Kevin Garnett. So David Stern said, no. That's enough for that. His impact might have been different than D-Wade's in the NBA, but I would have went D-Wade, Skip, for the simple fact I think D-Wade accomplished a little more as far as championships than AI. But I can understand, but I'm not disappointed that they chose AI.
I'm disappointed. I'm offended. I'm still shell-shocked over it because I am the biggest Dwayne Wade fan. And I love to watch Allen play. AI was spectacular. He was box office. He was marquee. He was highlight show. He was the littlest man putting up the biggest numbers with eye-popping, mind-bending moves and crossovers on big guys. And again, he was must-see TV for me. But I'm sorry, he just was not a better overall, more valuable basketball player than Dwayne was. Dwayne was a leader. Dwayne was a big game player. Dwayne was a big playmaker down the stretch. There's nobody more clutch than Dwayne making big plays. And I will forever give Dwayne credit for teaching LeBron how to be a pro, how to win championships. Obviously, LeBron more gifted than Dwayne because LeBron's as gifted as anybody there ever was. But it took Dwayne helping LeBron, big brothering LeBron, for LeBron to break through against the Baby Thunder that year. And I give Dwayne credit for carrying that first team in 06 to that championship. As you point out, he was the finals MVP, and he was three times all defense. I give Allen this. He could steal the ball because he led the league in steals three times, but it was 13 all-stars for Dwayne Wade to 11 for AI. And just in stature, in NBA magnitude, Dwayne Wade was on this level, and Allen was on some other level that wasn't up there in that sort of almost Rushmore level. And I'm sorry, Shannon, I would have just gone Dwayne Wade, slam dunk, no second thought about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, like I said, AI was special, Skip. But like I said, I would have went D-Wade also for the simple fact, Skip. I believe he's a little more accomplished, especially with the championships. But, you know, the All-NBA, the All-Stars, they are very, very close. And so I'm going to leave when it comes down to it, Skip. I'm always going to lean towards the guy that won the championships as opposed to the guy that didn't win the championship. Unless it's a situation like Barry Bonds. Now, if you got Barry Bonds, Skip, and you're just like, we've never seen anything like you before, that's a whole different ball game. But I would have gone with D-Wade also. No mercy.